Thank you.
Wow. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you, George, for inviting me. She's been trying to get me to come for a while now. And to be honest, that was, you know, it's out of my comfort zone. So I was like, okay, well, maybe not now, maybe later. And it's like, you know, I just felt, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to fill up a chair because I'm more comfortable sitting than standing. I figured if my wife could dance down Solstice in the parade today, which she did for her first time, she's now initiated into Santa Barbara during the Solstice parade. Well, I figured I can speak to you and I can tell you my story. It's been a long journey, but it's been a huge transformation. My sponsor is here, Duncan, who saw me at my worst, and it's been just a dramatic change, life change for me. So the objective, what I hope to share with you tonight is my experience, strength, and hope, impart some wisdom that, you know, worked for me. I don't know if it'll work for you. You know, I'm one of my mantras that I like. You probably hear a lot of mantras. I use a lot of mantras. But take what you like and leave the rest. That always worked for me. So, you know, if something I say resonates with you, that's great. If it doesn't, that's fine too. So who am I? I'm 62 years old. I'm a retired engineer from Raytheon. I have two now, I guess, adult boys. One is 21, the other is 25. They both live in San Jose. I'm going to talk more about my younger one because he was a lot of the reasons that I was brought to these rooms. It was really my son, my younger son, and my mother, and there were a number of things that kind of brought me to these rooms. So I am happily married, and it's almost a year now. I moved here to Santa Barbara in 1984. I'm so happy moving here from Los Angeles. And I am the youngest of three siblings. One of the reasons that I came here was because of my mother. My mother was of that era, and you're probably familiar with that era, where she really didn't have much of a choice in being a mother. That's what women did. She was actually an artist, and she loved painting and doing a lot of different art. But in the era that she was raised, my father wanted kids, and my mother just like, well, that's what women did. So she had four kids in 5 years. I had two kids in 3 years, and it almost broke me. She had four kids in 5 years, and she didn't want to have kids.
Boy.
That really wasn't what she was about. She was an artist. If she was born today, there's no question she wouldn't have kids, and she'd be an artist doing oil paintings. And she's a beautiful artist. So how did she cope? She drank. She drank, she took Miltowns, she used a lot of different, you know, avenues because, you know, raising kids, you know, is a very difficult thing, and I can attest to that. So she wasn't really there for me. I've forgiven her. You know, I've moved on. I went through a lot of phases, a lot through these meetings, to understand and accept and kind of forgive her and move on. And so, but I didn't know what was happening to me until later in life. I went to college, I got my degree, became an engineer, I got married, I had kids. It was like, I thought everything was fine. So I thought. I did have anxiety issues. And I was prescribed Valium. I was prescribed Valium a long time ago, and I didn't really know the effect it was having on me. Mm-hmm. So I was taking it and building up a tolerance, and I took it as prescribed, and I was just taking it every night, and my life was fine. So I thought. Around, this is probably about 10, 11 years ago, I started getting this acid reflux problem. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's where the acid in your stomach, when you go to sleep, it backs up through your esophagus because you have a sphincter muscle in your stomach that prevents the acid from backing up. Well, that wasn't working, and I was getting this pain and grief in my stomach. This is like, 10, 11 years ago. So I went to my doctor and I said, you know, hey, what's going on? And she said, oh, well, that's because, you know, you're taking Valium, and Valium is also a muscle relaxant. And so it was relaxing the muscles and allowing the acid to back up every time I slept, and it was causing me a lot of discomfort. And so I said, well, geez, it's been a long time. I feel good. I was probably on Valium 10 years. And I said, well, I'll just stop it. I was like, well, I don't need to take this anymore. I'll just stop it. Well, benzos are god-awful nasty. And I'll never forget, I was at work. I was working at Raytheon. I was trying to, you know, go about my day. And my anxiety was coming off the charts. I was having panic attacks. And I'm going, I couldn't cope. I couldn't function at work. And I started having suicidal thoughts. It was just horrible. And you know, this was a really difficult thing. And I just was pretty stupid to think that I could just cold turkey off of it. But I didn't know, knowing that if the doctor would have informed me, said, "Hey, you know, when you take this medication, this is really going to hook you hard, and you're never going to be able to get off this." I don't think I would have ever gone on. I would have found some other way to deal with this. But this was the tip of the iceberg. All this really did, because all Valium was really doing was hiding some symptoms that were going on from my past. Symptoms that were going on with my marriage at the time. And my son. My son was 12, 13, and was getting into drugs. He was very defiant, my youngest son. And he was suicidal. He was depressed. So the Valium was just masking this storm. I call it the perfect emotional storm, because I had a wife at the time that was drinking alcohol a lot, and she'd go out and she'd get drunk with her friends and come back and throw up, and the kids would go, what's going on? And you know, it's like, oh well, you know, mom's just, you know, having a hard time here. And then she was traveling a lot, and then that started it for me. That ripped the sheets off of what was hiding in the wings of my stage of life. I think I knew I was in trouble, because I couldn't cope. I was suicidal. I was a complete basket case, and I knew I needed help. So I think the first thing I did is I got a therapist, and then I ended up going through Cottage Hospital, having psychiatric problems, which led me to CRC. And what was interesting is so many of the people at CRC were alcoholics. And as the weeks would progress, they were getting better and they were feeling better. Well, that wasn't working for me. I was not getting better. I was getting worse. And they started trying all these different medications on me. And I would say I saw 5 different psychiatrists, and they all told me, well, why are you getting off Valium? Get back on it. And I'm going, what? I said, well, look, it was working for you. You know, it's you know, you're already on it. Get back on it. It's like, no, I don't. Because I saw the reality. It's like someone had given me, like in the Matrix, someone gave me, I think it's a red pill. It's like, oh my God. I all of a sudden saw things that I didn't see because I was just kind of numb and I was blind to it. And I didn't want to go back. But after the 28 days at CRC, I was a complete wreck. And they were trying antidepressants, all these different medications on me. And it wasn't working. So I got into the rooms of NA. And I started going. I think that's where I started. And then I found the camaraderie. And I had people that could understand what I was going through, because the doctors didn't seem to get it. And so I started in those rooms. That led me to Al-Anon. And I got very involved in Al-Anon. I realized I had issues with my son. And that's really what brought me to Al-Anon. And it was so difficult. By that time, my wife at the time and I were separating. So not only was I going through a terribly difficult detox, it took me to detox off of Valium 15 months to get off of that medication. And it took a willpower that was... I was an endurance athlete. I was a marathon runner. I was a triathlete. Nothing compared to the courage and the strength that it took me to continue on this path. I think it was around that time that I met Duncan in one of these rooms, in one of these meetings, and I asked him to be my sponsor. He helped save my life. Thank you, Duncan. There were times I didn't think I was going to make it. I remember one time I called Duncan and he was in his van near Trader Joe's out here in Milpitas. He probably remembers this. And I said, Duncan, help. I'm a complete basket case. And you know, he said, come on over. And he just helped me. And I just cried. And it was a very challenging time. I wasn't sure I was going to make it, but there was this part of me, and I attribute my father to this, that taught me that I could do whatever I set my mind to do. My father, contrary to my mother, was a wonderful parent. He loved being a father, and he enriched me with confidence and self-esteem. And he was the one that I heard the voice when the times were hard that kept me going, that, you know, I can do this. I just got to do the next pedal stroke. All I got to do, there's one more pedal. I'm a cyclist, so there's a very close analogy to that for me. And so calm myself down a little bit. So I started developing a plan and started to amass a support system. I created and made friends with many people in these rooms. I had a sponsor, a wonderful sponsor. I had friends. I had meetings. I was going to meetings all the time. I had a therapist. And then I finally found an organization called Recovery Roads that was willing. They helped me titrate off of Valium those 15 months. And it literally was taking a razor blade to a pill and slicing a little bit off, and then taking that, and then having 2 weeks of panic attacks before I settled and slice off another bit. So this went on, and all this time I had the meetings, I had my friends. I developed, and I don't know who suggested this, but it really worked for me, a daily recovery plan. I actually wrote out what I'm going to do every morning and every night. And I brought it here, if any of you are interested in seeing it. It had, call my sponsor, call these friends, serenity prayer, certain mantras that worked with me. One of the mantras that was very pertinent to me was, you can't heal what you can't feel. So whenever I would feel tremendous pain, I'm going, that's great, because it means the emotional wound is exposed and I'm feeling. And if I'm feeling, that means my brain knows how to heal it, just like a physical wound. And so I have that mantra, you can't heal what you can't feel. I would do a gratitude list in the morning. What am I grateful for? The toughest time for me was actually morning. I wake up with tremendous anxiety. And then, I went through a severe depression. And my therapist at the time said, depression feeds on isolation. I didn't want to go out. I just wanted to stay in bed. But that just kept feeding the depression. I literally had to say, okay, Gary, you're going out. Just get up, go out, go among people, go to a meeting, find some place to go. And so that was part of my recovery plan. I had it written out. And then I had, in that same recovery plan, when the shit hits the fan, what do I do? Because a lot of times for me, when the shit hits the fan, I can't think clearly. But if I have it written down, it's like, okay, I got it. I got to do this next. Oh yeah, okay, good. I have it written down. I know what to do. I'm shaking. I'm nervous. I'm panicky, and so that was really very, very helpful to me. So I was detoxing. I was dealing with anxiety. I was dealing with depression. My wife and I were separating, and we eventually got divorced. And my son was a wreck. So my wife kind of just dropped. She couldn't deal with my son, and she had her own problems. So she just left. She left the picture, left me while I'm going through all this, taking care of an adolescent that was really troubled. And it's like, oh shit, okay, so now I got this too. And that's why Al-Anon was really helpful. There was a purple pamphlet that I held on to, which I used to read over and over again, because one of the problems I had with my son, and for parents, I think you'll understand this, is that if he is doing well, I was doing well. But was he doing bad? I was just doing terrible. So it was like I was getting dragged behind a bus, and he's the driver in this bus. So one of my mantras for that in this pamphlet talked about was detaching with love. Because he was just dragging me through the mud and through, because he was having a hard time, and I was so connected to his success that I was even worse. He would accuse getting into drugs, and he was partying with his friends, and he was like high and happy, and I'm a mess at home waiting for him, worried and just so attached to his happiness. So that pamphlet I used to read quite often, which was Detach with Love, and the mantra for me was Let Go or Be Dragged, because that's exactly what it felt like. And that pertains to me, to other things and other people as well, that I was tied to approval of others. I was tied to the success of others. I was tied to what they thought of me. So that mantra was very, very helpful for me. Let go or be dragged. Because, you know, and there was, I would do a visual of being dragged behind this bus and letting go. And it just felt good. It's like, oh God, I'm not being, you know, raked across the gravel anymore. Wow, what a feeling this is. But I have to do it over and over again. It took practice, you know. Habits take a while to break for me. And that was one of them that took a while to break. So I don't know where it happened, but at some point someone shared the laundry list with me. And I looked at that laundry list and I'm going, I'm that. Oh yeah, I'm definitely that. And like, oh my God. And just bells started to go off and light bulbs went off. Like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is so me. And it brought into light. You know, now that I was exposed, I was detoxing, I was raw, my emotions were raw, I was feeling things I hadn't felt my whole life. And I started, you know, seeing things in my past. A lot having to do with my mother. And I think there was four or five of us that saw this and got together and said, you know, there's probably a good use for ACA in Santa Barbara. Let's start an ACA meeting. And so I think the first place was off of De La Vina. It was our first meeting place. I don't know, there was five or six people there. And we started ACA. We got the big red book, and it's like, but it just resonated. And like I've heard here, you know, the family of people, I felt so loved and comfortable and at peace with all these people. We all shared something so in common. It was powerful. And the message was powerful. And every time I came to the meeting and we shared, it was so powerful. And I knew, like, this resonated with me. This is where I needed to be. And we went from De La Vina, and I think then we went to Montecito. I'm not sure, there may have been one interim place. And it just started to grow. And the participation, the shares, the people was spectacular. And I was going to NA meetings, I was going to Al-Anon meetings, and I was ACA. But ACA, I felt the closest affinity to. And it just, I was such a people pleaser. There's another story, I don't know if Duncan remembers this. I used to eat chicken pot pie from Trader Joe's. I love chicken pot pies from Trader Joe's. And Duncan was at my house, and he says, you know, what are you doing? He says, that's terrible for you. Wow, I took a nosedive. Just that one statement alone. I was so tied to his approval. It's like, I can't eat this chicken pot pie anymore. You know, just, I'm a terrible person. It's like, I was so fixated on everybody's approval. And it was so liberating to start to wean myself off of all these things that ACA talks about, and I'm sure you've read about, you know, that I finally dealt with my mother and the issues that I had with her. And there was a time when I was 8 years old, I was severely injured. I went through a sliding glass door and almost lost my leg, and my leg, they said, would be paralyzed. It was a long story, I'll shorten it. Bottom line is, at 8 years old, they had to put me in a full cast of my leg up to my hip, and I was sequestered, and not in a room, in like some auxiliary room off the kitchen on like a lounge chair. And I had a little bell to get if I needed something. And my mom, she just couldn't deal with this. I mean, she was completely freaked out about what had happened to me. So she would go off and go drinking with her friends. She'd go across the street. There was a friend called the Nisbets, and she'd go drink with the Nisbets because it was just too much, you know, to deal with all these kids. Well, I couldn't move. I couldn't get up to go to the bathroom. You know, I needed a urinal to go to the bathroom. There was no way I could move. The cash was so heavy. And there was a bee came in. And my foot is out like this, and my foot is bare, and this bee is just attacking me. And I'm like, oh my God, it's stinging me, and I'm ringing the bell, and nobody is coming. I kept ringing the bell, and nobody, my mother was not there, because she was drunk somewhere, because she couldn't deal with it. And so I just was ringing this bell, and I was crying. And I was 8-year-old kid just crying. And, I talk about abandonment. I just felt completely abandoned. And I never dealt with this. I didn't deal with this until I was an adult. And so adult child of alcoholics, yeah, I know what that means. And that certainly hit home for me. That was great to process that. One other thing that I did from the ACA meetings, and it really was a wonderful way to take ACA and turbocharge it, because I enjoyed the ACA meetings, I enjoyed the shares, but it wasn't enough. So four of us decided, hey, you know, we've got the time, we have the energy, this is powerful stuff. We want more time to share. So we didn't stop going to the ACA meeting, but we got together at my house or at this other person that was part of this group, and we met for an hour and a half every week on top of that. And we had, it was ACA on steroids is what it was like. It was so powerful because we had the time to go deeper into some of the, you know, the steps of ACA, or, you know, some we wanted to explore things, and the intimacy that we had and the trust that we had with each other was so powerful. We met, I think, every week for at least an hour and a half for 2 years, and on top of all the other meetings, and it was like an amazing boot camp ACA on steroids, and it was just a fabulous way to take ACA and take it a step further. What else did I want to say? Let me just look at my notes. The other thing I wanted to share with you, and after this I will finish up if I can find it, is you've heard some of the mantras I've shared with you. I'm a believer that every one of us is a sage, that every one of us holds experiences and wisdom that is unique to themselves. And on my 60th birthday, I wanted to extract the wisdom and the knowledge that people have and learn from them. So for my 60th birthday, I asked 30 of my closest friends and family to share with me what I call WOW TLB, Words of Wisdom to Live By. And because I feel that they can impart something on me, and I can impart something on them. So what I wanted to do is collect it. So I asked them, I said, you know, before my birthday, I said, you know, here, this is what I'm doing, and I'm creating this little book. This is what the book looks like. And it's Words of Wisdom to Live By. And I said, I just want to collect the collective wisdom, like the collective wisdom in this room. There's probably a ton of it from all your experiences and your unique experiences. Well, I want to do that for my friends. and I wanted to assemble it into a book, and then I wanted to give it to them and to share, you know, those words of wisdom. So I wanted to, if I can, share some of them out of this book. And it's interesting, there's a lot of similarities between them. Change is the big constant in life. I have learned to accept it, embrace it, flow with it, and find the growth in it. There's a reason the here and now is called a present, the present. It's a gift. The more I stay in the present, the less I worry and the happier I am. By the way, these, you'll see in these, I have, because I wanted to keep anonymity. I don't put people's names, it's just their initials and their age. Because I thought the age was kind of interesting. Because I asked people across from 15 years old to 8 years old. Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember. Involve me and I learn. This is a Winnie the Pooh one. Winnie the Pooh. Do you know what day it is? Piglet. Yes, it is today. Winnie. Oh boy, my favorite day. We do not remember days. We remember moments. Maybe I should have told you the ages. This is a 69-year-old person. When there is no enemy within you, the enemies outside cannot hurt you. Search for yourself by yourself. Do not allow others to make your path for you. It is your road and yours alone. Others may walk with you, but no one can walk it for you. The nicest thing you can do for someone is to let them help you. With love, anything is possible. Love is greater than anything else. Love overcomes anything and everything. Look into the eyes of another. I know I'm looking into the eyes, mind and heart of God. We are not here to see through each other. We are here to see each other through. Okay, I think there's a bunch here. And I have these. I have a bunch of extras if anybody wants them. They're just free for the taking. And you're welcome to have one. All of these are anonymous. And there's this one. I'm going to violate anonymity because she died. And this was my... She died not too long ago. This is my ex-mother-in-law. We were very, very close. So she was like 8 years old. And of course, she puts her age down here. It's 39 plus tax and insurance. Cracked me up. I so admired this woman. She walked through life with such grace and dignity. So I'll leave you with this one. Be grateful. Love completely, dream big, laugh a lot, be yourself. Thank you.